Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yud. Okay, so now we're into the snakes. Now, I have to tell you my suspicions, okay, about this daf. We're going to be talking about many of issues that are very primal in terms of the Gan Eden experience, all the reproductive issues, the stress on the snake as being a phallic figure that is chasing after Chava, the klolos of Gan Eden in terms of zivais and nidais, the connection of Gan Eden to palm and to the idea of fingernails, which was the, I'm sure you all know about that, and the relationship of these fingernails to reproduction and the danger for Nisha Hara and the way that the original skin of Adam Rishon is seen to be tzipor and so on and so forth. So what I really think is going on is that the Gemara is basically forcing us into these very primal mythical images. And it's almost like you're a psychiatrist listening to a patient's insane dream when you read this Gemara. It's very disturbing graphic images that are meant to stay with you and give you the sense of what the Pasuk is referring to when it refers to the permanent hatred that seems to be stuck in our minds about the nature of our relationship to snakes. Now, we know that there's a lot of really profound psychological imagery that's involved in this in terms of modern psychology. And there's even suggestions that have been made that these are remnants of early mammal versus reptile memories, so to speak, that are programmed into the early parts of our brains. And because of that, it's essential in recreating the relationship that Adam has with the world to be able to actually sense these images, which have become very, very distant from us in a modern society. And lemaisa are still part of the way people look at life. In 90% of the world, it's only the very distant from nature world that would see all of this as being cuckoo. But I mean, if you take a look, just look around at the internet and take a look at the kind of things people believe about snakes and how recent it is that the idea of being friends with reptiles like this has been acceptable and has changed. All of that being part of the development of humanity into a completely different type of ro'ui for Gan Eden early relationship, I believe. And I think a lot of things are tending in that direction. So we'll go on into this dream. Please don't be disturbed by the very graphic images, the disturbing images, but this is the only way in which it's possible to come face to face with the underlying psychological issues that are involved. So Haiman Descartes,
the relationship with reptile.
I believe that the human ability to interrelate with the world is becoming much more sophisticated and not mythically based, but based on a deeper connectedness to the world. The problem is that you lose this when you go through the phase of sophistication, you lose all connection and feeling for the natural world. So that was the early part, the Industrial Revolution, the Scientific Revolution, and so on and so forth. As time goes on, the profound interrelationship that we have with all elements of nature becomes more and more part of the way we actually view the world and experience the world, which is an amazing thing. I mean, it's only over the past 20 years or so that this is becoming part of regular people. You know, as children are educated this way, it's an entirely new paradigm. And then there's, you know, so children love spiders, they love whales, these are things that people were absolutely terrified of. I mean, these were the images of monsters, you know, octopuses. That was what a monster was an octopus. An alien invader from Mars was shaped like an octopus. And now these are friends of kids that will go scuba diving in order to hold hands with the octopuses and so on, right? So, you know, it's not only the beetles that go visiting octopuses' gardens. You know? So these are completely new ways of interrelating. And you have to realize that Adam HaRishon is described on two levels in terms of the Torah. There's the Adam prior to Chet, in which the relationship with a Nachash is completely natural. And then there's the Adam post-Chet, in which there's this unbelievable gezeira about the Sina that is going to be part of the development of humans and the way that they relate to the world. And again, this is, it's so deeply linked in us to sexuality and to the phallic aspect of snakes that all of the images, I mean, even today, in pornography, women and snakes are deeply interrelated. And because these touch on profound psychic images. So the Gemara is going to actually go through and recreate some of these images, but I don't think that we should view it as being something that is different than a horrifying dream, essentially, or the kind of images that you'll find about snakes. Anyway, so Haiman de Karche Chivya. So a person that's got maybe a boa constrictor around him. I mean, what are you supposed to do about that? These actually are serious problems because there are yearly attacks by boa constrictors that do exactly this, or pythons. And what should he do? So, linchot lamaya, go get into the water, take a basket and put the basket over the head of the snake, gradually lower the basket so that the snake that feels the water around him tries to hold on to the basket. When the snake climbs onto the basket, then throw it into the water and run. Get out of the water fast. So a person that a snake is after. Now, there doesn't seem to be any reality to the possibility of a snake being after somebody, but people believe all over the world that snakes are full of vengefulness. You know, there's this belief if you kill the snake's mate, it'll come and attack you 20 years later and so on. Fine. I mean, but these are all popular beliefs, but they're reflected here. So Ika Chavre Bahades, if somebody is with you, what you should do is get on his back and let him carry you for at least 4 amos, because that at least will interrupt the snake's sensitivity to the smell of your feet. The Elo, if you don't have anybody like that, jump over a little bit of water so that interrupts the stench. The Elo, if you don't have that, then maybe cross a river on a boat or something. If it's at night and you're afraid that this snake is going to get you, so then you should put your bed on top of 4 barrels, one under each leg of your bed, so that the snake can't just climb up on the bed, and sleep outdoors under the stars, because otherwise the snake could always climb along the roof and fall down at you and strangle you that way. It was this horrible story, by the way, just a few years ago. I'm sure you heard it in Canada, of this pet store that was under someone's home, and a boa constrictor escaped from the pet store, went through the air conditioning vents into the home upstairs, and there were 2 kids that were sleeping in bed, and killed both of them in the middle of the night. Just fell down out of the air conditioning vent, and this is a real story, and it's absolutely awful, and killed both kids. So this kind of thing, I don't believe the business about mikneh bechivya, but this certainly like people feel about it. So sleep under the stars and use cats. Not many people know that the cats in Yerushalayim were brought there on purpose because of the snakes. And it used to be that they did not have cats. What they had was monkeys, believe it or not. Monkeys were very popular in Yerushalayim because the monkeys would go after the snakes. And then there was a virus that killed the monkeys. And so they imported cats and started breeding cats around here, which have become, you know, unbelievable. But anyway, so cats are very good. They can't stand snakes, and they like to have fun killing snakes. And therefore, what you do is bring some cats, and you should get 4 cats, one on each side. Tie them to the 4 legs of your bed, and then bring things that make noise, you know, like twigs or bells or whatever. Leash they also throw them around the floor. And then when the cats hear a snake approaching, they'll jump on it and they'll eat it. And if you're being chased by a snake, best thing to do is to get into some sand, and that will make it hard for the snake to take a straight path because it gives up chasing you. Now, if a woman was seen by a snake and she doesn't know whether this snake has been turned on to her or not. So remember that this is a reference to the relationship of the Nochash in Gan Eden that was Mekane and wanted to sleep with Chava. This is the whole idea of the phallic aspect of the snake, where afterwards he's reduced to a phallus. And then the idea of Bris Mila, which is the taming of the snake, so to speak, is that the Orla is put, even today, the Orla is put into a little box with dirt in it, because Nachash is Afar Lachmo. So the Nachash was given dirt to eat, and the Orla represents the pre-Bris Mila pure reptilian nature of the phallic snake. And because of that, we actually put it into offer as a remez of being, making the separation between the human and the reptilian in terms of sexuality. So in this Gemara also, we're talking now about that vision of the Nochash being Mekana Bechava. So a woman is seen by a snake. Now, she doesn't know whether the snake has been turned on to her or not. So what could she do? Well, these snakes have a lot of fetishes, you know. So if she takes off her clothing and throws it down on the ground, and then the snake winds itself around the clothing, obviously he's turned on to her. So she better watch out because he's after her, right? But if he doesn't get turned on by her clothing, then he's not thinking about her. So what do you do if he does start going nuts with her clothes? So what she should do is she should actually have intercourse in front of the snake with her husband. Others say, on the contrary, that for sure is going to turn him on. Of course, that goes again back to the relationship with Adam and Chava and the Vayushneim Erumim, Veloyut Boshasho, as Rashi says, Bitoch Kach, the Nochash was Mekane. So some say just the opposite. So Koshkin to Tokifleyitz, right? So what she should do, and here again, this goes back to the Gan Eden vision, take some of her hair, some of her fingernails, throw it at the snake, and then say to the snake, Dishtana'ana, that I am having a period, which of course also all part of the primal relationship of Gan Eden instantly. Now, how about a woman who was actually penetrated by a snake and it got right into her vagina? Like, this is exactly what a snake would want to do, assuming that he's really a phallus, right? So what do you do with her? I must warn you, this is very graphic and disgusting. So lifsa'a, she should spread her legs, litvua atarte chavita, sit down on two different barrels, and that way she'll be wide open. Veleite bisra shamna, velishte agumre, take some really good smelling meat, fatty meat, put it on a barbecue. Bring a basket of garden cress. Interesting, isn't that it's called garden? Even today, they still call it garden cress. So, I don't know that it's so far-fetched that it has something to do with the original garden. Anyway, and liter ke bahane adade, put it together, sorry, with chamere chatana, you have fragrant smelling wine. Again, this is amazing. These are things like straight out of the Gan Eden scenario. And so you mix wine, women, snakes, song, and boiling meat. Anyway, grab a tongue, which, of course, is the thing that was the last thing listed in the Bein HaShemoshes creation, was the tzavat, shasuya b'tzavat. So grab those tongues, and then when the snake smells the delicious smell, it's going to start sticking its head out of her vagina, grab it, and then throw it into the fire. Because if you don't get it into the fire right then and there, it's going to get back to her and attack her again. Okay, you can let the kids back in now. So, kola ochalin, we go back to the Mishnah. So, kola ochalin, the Mishnah said that if something is a food that is normal person would eat, then there's no iser in eating it, even though you're only interest for you is for refua, because it has to be, as we saw earlier, mukha milta. It has to be very clear that your purpose is refua. Otherwise, the Rabbanan did not aser it. And it says kol ha-mashkin also. Now, when you say kol ha-ochalin, like, what exactly do you mean by saying, I mean, you're obviously making a broader than, you don't say ha'ochlin, you say kol ha'ochlin. So what would that add? Latuye mai. I'll tell you, that adds, even if you want to eat spleen, which is good for toothache, but it's very bad for your stomach. So it has side effects. Or you want to eat karshinin. Now, karshinin may be very good for your stomach, but they're very bad for your teeth. Probably the correct girsa should be kirishin, like the Gemara in Brachas, which is leeks. Anyway, so over there, the Shiloh would be, yes, people would eat this food, but they wouldn't eat this food if it has a side effect. That's what you would think. And therefore, if somebody's eating it despite the side effects, it must be that he's taking the refuah. Kamash malan, that actually people will eat things. Vaharaya, people will eat cake. Or kol hamashkin, anything that you drink. What does kol come to include? I mean, even Coca-Cola. Because that would be something that has dangerous side effects, obviously. But unbelievably, regular people actually drink it, despite the fact that they don't need it at that moment to clean the batteries. So latuye mait slafim b'chometz. So if you soak caper in water and then mix it with vinegar, which is a very wonderful way to cure a toothache, but people will not normally drink that kind of thing. Kamash malan, that, yeah, it could be drinking, you know, you never know what people are ready to drink. Omele Ravina Larova, are you allowed to drink urine, or is that considered to be clearly medicinal? Now, you can sit there and laugh. Drink urine? What are you, crazy? And I'll have you know that in the 1900s, we're not talking about like 200 years ago, there was like a major movement in the early part of the century, in the 20s, that were people were drinking urine. It was one of the most popular books that this guy wrote about urine therapy. And it's still practiced, by the way. It's still practiced in many areas. There's movie actors that spent 30 years drinking their own urine. Don't ask. So it sounds crazy to you. But, you know, there's all kinds of wonderful books. The Waters of Life, or they base it on the Pusik and Mishle. Shtei mayim miborcha, drink water from your own cistern. There's all kinds of crazy remosim. And people continue to believe in many parts of the world. This is like a deep belief that the best way to cure anything is to drink urine. There was even a recent court case in Saudi Arabia of a guy who was arrested because of the fact that he was selling camel urine, which is a very popular medication in Saudi Arabia. And can you imagine? It turned out to be the guy's own urine. A chutzpah. Okay. So I don't know what you'd rather drink. I think probably a camel rather than the Arab. But anyway, getting back to it. So would you be allowed to drink urine on Shabbos? Because obviously it would be, I mean, would that be considered to be a refuah? Oh, my late, look, man, the Mishnah says you can drink any beverage, okay? Beverages might include Coca-Cola, but I ain't ever seen a bottle of cold urine. So, may maglaim lo shato inshe. That's not considered to be a beverage. All right, continues on. Chutz mi made the kalim. So, the lashon in the Mishnah, you could drink any type of drink, except for palm tree water. Now, the Braita has actually a girsa, chutz mi mei dikarim, which is sharp, sharp water. And what exactly would that be referring to? So, mandatana mei dikarim is talking about something we're going to see, identify that later on as maybe zesuma mitzri, according to Shabbos, we'll see. But the reason that it's called that is because sheim dokrim et hamara, because what they can do is they can almost do surgery on your gallbladder. They're that effective, and they will take out, remember, there was a whole theory of disease that had to do with bile, you know, and if you're able to cure the gallbladders, then that takes care of a whole bunch of different diseases. Mandiyama medikalim is referring to water that comes out between two palm trees. What? My medikalim, sorry? Omer Rabba Bar Bruna, look, I'll tell you, there's two types of tila'i. Tila'i is a certain species of palm. And in Eretz Yisrael, they've got these two trees growing. Venavka ena demaya mibinayu. There's this spring, and right between them, you drink that stuff. If you drink one cup, that's a great laxative, you know? So it loosens you. If you drink two cups, then my gosh, you get a terrible diarrhea. And if you drink a third cup, the next cup is going to come out the other end as clear as when it went in the first point, because nothing is left in your intestines. Omer ula ledidi shati shichra de bavloi. I can tell you, whew, I've tried that beer that they sell in Bavel. Oh my God, it's much more effective than that. Whew. If you're going in for a colonoscopy, let me tell you, a couple of Bavel beers is a lot better than that stuff they give you to drink. But anyway, that's only if you haven't accommodated your system to it. You didn't drink it for the past 40 days, then it'll really kill you. Rav Yosef says, you know, the made decorum is Zeisom HaMitzri. So the Zeisom HaMitzri was this very popular beer, and it's there's all kinds of recipes that the Gemara talks about. And who the Zeisom HaMitzri is Tiltasare. So it's made out of one third barley. It's made out of one third kurtami. Some translators that is saffron and one third salt. Rav Papa says, no, don't use barley. You use wheat. Wheat, one-third wheat, one-third of the kurtami, and one-third salt. And if you want to remember who said what, whether it was Reb Yosef, there's the one that was said it was barley, sari. The way to remember is just remember sisani. And sisani is a kind of basket that holds dates. So if you think of sisani, you think of samach, which is the Rav Yosef, sare, so sisani. There you go. V'shati lo bein divchala tzarta. Now, this thing only works if you drink it between Pesach and Shavuos. And during that time, if you are constipated, it'll loosen your bowels to come at merapile. And if you've got diarrhea, the rafi, it will actually bind your bowels. Come it like. Kosi, Karin, the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was a cup of Pashtas, meaning Ikarin, various roots, but Ikarin also means sterilizing. So, Mykos Ikarin, Omer Rabbi Yochanan. How do you make this stuff? Well, first of all, you bring azuz of kuma. We had the gum Arabic before. This is specifically referring to trees, Alexandrian trees. Umatka zuza, and a weight of one zuz of gavya gila, which is alum, and one zuz, mitka zuza, of, again, the, this is garden saffron, the kurkuma rishka, grind them all together. And this is how it works. Look, it's very good if a woman is having a lot of problems with her period and she's a zava, constantly bleeding without any particular hormonal control. So what you should do is you should take these three things that we just spoke about and mix them with wine. And the mixing them with wine will make sure that it's not overly powerful and it will not sterilize this woman. So she'll still be able to have children. If it's to cure hepatitis, then you take two. That's the way Rashi understands it. You take two out of the three ingredients, maybe any two. The Rambam understands it in the Pirshei Mishnayos as meaning two cups as opposed to three cups and mix it with beer. And not with wine. And then actually it does have a serious side effect because it sterilizes. To a zava, you would take, let's go through it again, because the only reason we're re-mentioning this is because we're about to have a whole list of various things that would be effective for stopping zivas. And again, this is part of the clawless of Gan Eden, the interrelationship with the various, I mentioned to you yesterday that there's an actual cherem against using these things. And I mean, the way that the Yamshel Shlomo speaks of it and other Mefarshim speak of it is that the things that are brought here as refuas are based on a completely different level of interrelationship with the world around you. And therefore, for you to think that you know exactly what it's talking about without all of the psychological elements that are fundamental to curative properties of things is crazy. And therefore, you're playing with fire. You don't know what you're talking about. And you're doing all sorts of things. Many of these things might even be dangerous. And therefore, it's usher to even try these things. So we're going to have a whole list. It's because we're going to have a whole list. So Rashi explains, if we're going to have a whole list, we started with the first thing on the list. which was where that we just quoted, the idea of lezovat lasa b'charmra velomi akra. What happens if that doesn't work or you don't have these ingredients available? So ve'ilo, what should you do to cure the zova? So what you can do is you can bring three kapizis worth. A kapizi is quite large. It holds three lug, Rashi says. So bring three kapizis of these onions, Persian onions, boil them up in wine, and give them as a drink to this poor woman. And then you say to her as she drinks it, kum mizovech. Now that doesn't work. You can sit her down right at an intersection, and she should be holding a cup of wine in her hand, and someone should sneak up on her from behind and go, boo! And then she jumps up and she's scared to death. And then he says to her, this is also good for hiccups, by the way. And then he says to her, kum mizovech. Come on, you got to have a good sense of humor here. Now, if that doesn't work, now this is one of our favorite ingredient in a lot of the is abuna kamuna. Okay, what is abuna kamuna? So abuna kamuna is a fistful of cumin. So you need to have abuna kamuna and abuna de murica. You got a fistful of the saffron we said before, abuna de shavalita, which is fenugreek. Boil them all together and in wine. Okay, give her a good drink and then say to her, kum mizovech. And if that doesn't work, so then take 60 clay the seals that they put on the barrels, put it into water, as Rashi explains, let them actually melt into the water, and then smear them on her body and say to her, kum mizovech. And if that doesn't work, then what you should do is you should bring pashtina. Now, pashtina is a type of plant that, as the name implies, it's mitpashet. It grows only horizontally. We use it as ground covering instead of grass in many places. And lishlok b'chamra, so boil that up in wine, smear it on her body, and say to her, kum mizovech. Now, if that doesn't work, you should bring a charnuga of, and that's, Rashi says, it's just a kind of herbal plant that grows next to these bushes that are called rumita bushes, and burn it. And then take the ashes, if it's summertime, take the ashes in linen, and if it's wintertime, use cotton, and let her wear that. Now, if that doesn't work, you should dig these seven holes, burn a branch from a vine, a grapevine, that is orla, so it's still a young vine, burn it, and then in each one of these things, you have this, the ashes of this vine. And then linkot kasa de chamra biyada, let her hold a cup of wine in her hand, and then sit her down on one of these, then get her up, sit her down on another one, until she gets into all of them. And each time that you sit her down on one of them, I mean, each time that she stands up from one of them after you sat her down, you should say, get up, kum mizovech. Now, if that doesn't work, get some flour, really high quality flour, and spread it over the lower half of her body, and say to her, kum mizovech. And if that doesn't work, now, this is like the reason that in South Africa, ostrich farms are so popular, because the only thing that will work for this is an ostrich egg. If you've gotten to this point, so you got to get to the ostrich farm. So you bring an ostrich egg, don't turn it into a lamp that people like to do, but instead burn it. And what you should do is, again, take the ashes, depending if it's winter or summer, use linen in the summer, use cotton in the winter, let her wear that. If that doesn't work, whew, let me tell you something. You better invest in a barrel of wine that you owe, because she's got to start drinking. And I mean drinking. And that's the old, this is where it became the housewife's disease, right? Because none of the other things worked. So she should just keep drinking and open one of these for her. Let her just keep drinking. And if that doesn't work, now, this might be a little difficult, but you got to go around until you find the dung of a white mule. Now, white mules are very popular for messiahs and things like that. And if you've got the dung of a white mule, which, of course, the Gemara spoke about as being, you know, I'd be happy to be in the shadow of the dung of his mule. So that might also have something to do with some very primal tikkunei adam relationships. Anyway, find a barley grain in the dung. Okay, lots of scientists do this. Don't worry about it. It's not as bad as it sounds. So find a barley grain in the dung. if she holds one of them, or if she holds it for one day, it's machlok is how to understand it, one barley grain or one day, for one day, or two barley grains, or one barley grain for 2 days. Anyway, so if she holds it for one day, so then the bleeding will stop for 2 days. And if she holds it for 2 days, the bleeding will stop for 3 days. And if she holds it for 3 days, then she's been cured. Let's move on to hepatitis. So we said before, to cure that, you should use 2 out of the 3, or according to Rambam, 2 cups. Mix it with beer, but the problem is it's got a serious side effects, and it will sterilize. Now, if that doesn't work, you can take a fish, that's called the shibuta, we spoke about him in Chulin, take the head of a shibuta fish that is salted, and boil it up in beer, and drink that. Now, if that doesn't work, locust juice will do it for you. So just bring some locusts and squeeze out their juice. You know, if you don't have any of that, you can always bring juice from a nekiri bird. And then take the guy who's got the hepatitis, bring him into like a really hot place, like a bathhouse, get this juice and put it over his body. If you don't have a bathhouse, just find a hot place in your own home. You know, you could put him between the oven and the wall where it gets nice and hot. And Rabbi Yochanan says, look, if you want to really get him warm so that he sleeps it off, yekanchenel besadino, wrap him in his own sheet until he gets like so hot and sweats it out. Rav Acha bar Yosef Chashbe, he had this hepatitis, and Avad Rav Kahana, Rav Kahana did this for him, v'itase, and indeed he was cured. And if that doesn't work, then you can always bring 3 kapizas. We talked about before how large the kapiza was, three lug of, this time not Persian onions. You could use Persian dates this time. Whew, it's a little bit easier. And then 3 kapizas of, now this is a very special wax. This has got to be wax that's dripping out of honeycomb, and it's so overflowing, this honeycomb, that you collect the wax. And then you bring red aloe, 3 kapizas of that. Boil all of this up in beer and let him drink that. Now, if that doesn't work, you should bring a young donkey foal and you should shave the hair off of the middle of your sufferer, the hepatitis sufferer. Take a little bit of blood that you draw from the forehead of the young foal and put that blood on the shaving area of your patient. But be very careful, don't get any of this in his eyes, because that's a disaster. He could get blinded from that. And if that doesn't work, well, you could always bring a pickled ram head available in your butcher, and then boil that up in beer and have him drink that. Now, if that doesn't work, well, you got to find a little piggy that's got all types of different spots on its skin. And you tear that open, and you put it on the guy's heart. Don't open his chest, just on top of his chest. This will be much more effective. And if that doesn't work, then you can always get the kind of leeks that are growing in the middle of a whole row of leeks. Those are very strong leeks, and that's very good. There was this Arab guy, actually, who had hepatitis. And he went over to a gardener, and he told the gardener, look, I'll trade you my coat if you give me a row of leeks from your garden. So they made the deal, and he gave it to him, and then he ate it. And then the Arab says to the guy, could you just lend me your coat, meaning the coat that I just gave you, because Rabbi Yochanan said, you got to wrap the guy in his own sheet. I just want to sleep it off a little bit. So the guy lent it to him. He fell asleep, and it got so hot that when he got up, the coat was left in little tattered pieces. But, all right, don't trade leeks for an Arab's coat. Next, another thing we said before. So if you want to, we'll talk about this in a minute. Sorry?
Or a cow for magic beans.
Right. So I just want to tell you a fascinating story that actually happened to me. There was this whole incredible period. There was this period where everybody was getting hepatitis. You know, it goes around. And this was like some 56 years ago this happened. And hepatitis at that point was like going around and everybody was getting sick. And they came up with these popular remedies, right? So one of these crazy remedies that was a segula from God knows who, I mean, you know, the greatest and the best, was to take a pigeon, right? And then you would hold the pigeon on the patient's liver, and the pigeon, it would actually turn yellow, right? And that was took out all of the jaundice from the patient and went into the pigeon, and then the pigeon would drop dead. Now, okay, so everybody was doing this, was actually doing this. It was like crazy, and everybody was getting cured. So anyway, I was close friends with a really lovely guy. He became a psychiatrist ultimately. He was a doctor. So we decided to run an experiment because one of the guys in my apartment had actually come down with this hepatitis. So we sure enough, so we got a number of pigeons. You know, we hold the pigeon down on the guy's liver. Sure enough, the pigeon right on schedule turns yellow. Its eyes turn all yellow, and it drops dead. Okay, so we do this with a number of different pigeons. You know, you're supposed to do it like if it doesn't work the first day, you do it the second day, then you do it the third day. Anyway, so we kept doing this with the pigeons until finally, after three pigeons, the patient was all better. You know. Great. All of a sudden, he got all better. Anyway, so what my friend did is he autopsied all of the pigeons, right? So it turned out the pigeons had all been asphyxiated by holding them down on the guy's liver and not allowing them. When the pigeon is asphyxiated, it actually turns yellow. Its eyes turn yellow and it loses oxygen, right? So these were all strangled to death pigeons. Now, so then we went and spoke to some liver disease experts about like why this was working. It isn't working. It's all that happens is that the standard progression of the disease in this jaundice is that there's a stage which all of a sudden there's a tremendous drop in bilirubin. And like it looks like, you know, this has been an instantaneous cure. And that's what happens at the end. And so when you keep doing this, ultimately, you know, you get to the day in which the bilirubin, it finally worked. This pigeon was really the good pigeon. Of course, nobody would believe this. Chas v'sholem to believe such a thing. But anyway, the remedies definitely work. Okay. So then let's go back to what we said before on Ahmed Olive. So we said, if somebody is jaundiced, so you take two of these, again, does it mean two cups, or does it mean two out of the three ingredients, mix it with beer, and you can drink this, but it has the unfortunate side effect of sterility. Now, the question is, are you allowed to drink something that causes sterility? Isn't there an iser in the Torah to sterilize any type of male animal, including humans? So how is this mutter? Asked the Gemara. Mishari, v'atanya minayin l'sari. How do we know sirus ba'adam? It should be aser. Talmud lomar uba'artzechem lo ta'asu. So ba'artzechem lo ta'asu. We darsh it because I mean the pasuk is referring to the dinim of korbanos and what type of mumim you're not allowed to bring. So it lists a lot of mumin in the reproductive system, ma'uch, katut, natuk, v'charut, all different issues that can wreck testicles. And it says, lo takrivu la'ashem. And then it says, uba'artzechem lo ta'asu. Don't do this in your land. So the Gemara, darshins in Chagiga, what do you mean in your land? It's not a din in the land. It's a halacha that has nothing to do with chovas karka. So how could it be a function of your land? So we darshan from that kol sheba artzecha, meaning any animal, even if it isn't roi for the mizbeach, so you wouldn't even be allowed to do this to a dog, right? So people will often sterilize pets and so on to avoid all kinds of problems. You're not allowed to do that. But that, as Tosus explains here, is the diuk from aretz, not artzechem. Because, I mean, even if we would say ba'aretz lo ta'asu, it would have meant the same thing, kol sheba aretz lo ta'asu. So therefore, over here, we're darshaning the chem, meaning bachem, don't do this to yourselves, meaning to humans. Also, you can't do this. So you see from here that sirus of an adam is aser. So says Rabbi Hanina. Now, because all of these are testicular, They're all issues that affect males. Therefore, there's no issue of Sirus on a female. So now the question over here is, why would you be allowed to take this medication that has such an usur side effect? So the Gemara says, because it is not what your kavana is. And therefore, over here, if you intend to do something that is going to be misares, so then that is usur. But if it's a side effect of something else that you do, which is mi'atzmobo, it just happens on its own. It's certainly not what you would want to do. So then it's not considered to be usur. Because how do I know that that's true? Now, what we're assuming now is that the meaning over here, it's actually machlokes rishonim, how to learn this. But I think the most reasonable approach is that we're not talking at this point of the nafkamina of whether it's a dover shemitkaven or a dover sheino mitkaven, in terms of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, not yet. But what we are talking about is the question of whether the type of castration that the Torah is talking about, since it specifies at each point, it specifies what exactly you're doing to an organ of reproduction, that something that has to do with hormonal issues and so on and so forth, or the production of sperm or whatever, those things the Torah is not speaking about, because they're not gross violations in terms of castration. They're medical results, and there would be no issur in that. And I'll prove it to you. Because Rabbi Yochanan says, if you want to make sure that a rooster is castrated, all you need to do is take off the crest from its head, which doesn't have anything to do with reproduction, at least not on a gross level, and it's mistares me'ilav, and then it just becomes castrated. So it can no longer reproduce. So you see from there that if you are not dealing with genitalia, there's no problem of castration. Yes, the Gemara, but it isn't really castrated. It's not true. The point is that a rooster is so stuck up about that beautiful crest that if you take it away, it would be like cutting off a movie star hair, and then he's not going to be able to get it up. I mean, because after all, that's the whole issue, right? So this poor rooster, it's not that he can't reproduce. It's just that you've killed him. The poor guy is devastated. So it's ramod rucho denakitlei. It's such a stuck-up kind of animal that it absolutely goes into mourning and refuses to do its thing. So that doesn't prove anything, because here we're talking about it really does sterilize, but over there it's just that it's not going to do anything to get your chickens pregnant, right? So that can't be a riot. Therefore, we have to understand it like this. It's talking about this someone who already is a soris, and there would be no iser in going ahead and giving him a medication where the result is serious. That's not true. Because didn't we learn that when it comes to, there's certain things where if you already did something, then to do it again is not going to be an issue, Bichlal, right? So let's say something has a mum. This is where this comes up initially. So if you put a mum into a bal mum, would it be usur or not? Because it's kol mum lo yabot. So this is machlokes tanoim about that. But everybody is made it. That there are things, let's say, for instance, when it comes to bringing a korban mincha. So over there, you would be chayev on every step. So let's say one guy, he made the original mix of the mincha. He made it chometz. And the next guy bakes it as chometz. And so on. Every step will be a separate iser. That's because we learned it out from the pasuk. Shnemar lo te'afer chametz and lo te'aser chametz. So because of that, the Torah is saying any step that's involved in it would be a separate iser of chametz. Everybody's made on that. And here's the part that's important to us. Everybody is made that if you are misares, someone that was already misuras, that you would be chayev. Because the way that the Torah speaks about it is by describing four different stages that you'd be talking about testicles that are either ma'uch or katut or natuk or charut. Now, if you're going to be chayev even on charut, which according to Tosfos means you've basically cut the cords of these testicles partially, but they're not completely detached. According to Rashi, the difference is that the natuk would not here, but Rashi says that they would have to actually be no longer in the scrotum if they're natuk. Tosfos says they would be in the scrotum, but they wouldn't have any attachment to the vas deferens or anything else. So then wouldn't you be for sure chayev on natuk? Why mention the natuk if you're already being mechayev just on the first step of karut? Must be to tell me that even if it was already karut and it was castrated, but then if you're no take, you would be chayev anyway. So that would mean that you would be chayev in a misares, achar misares. So we're back to where we started. That would mean that it should be usur to take this medication that has that kind of side effect. Well, maybe it's talking about an old man who basically can no longer engage in such activities. He would be allowed to drink this stuff. Really? Rabbi Yochanan was like 120 years old, you know? And he talks about these things that are good for virility that the Gemara describes in Gittin. And he says, yeah, I tried some of that. Let me tell you, turn me back into a 15-year-old. So obviously you can be pretty old, but it doesn't mean that you cannot engage in these activities. So why would it be mutter to be misares? Ella b'isha. Obviously, it could be referring to a woman. And all of the things in the Torah are referring to male genitalia. And what about according to Rabbi Yochanan of Broca, who says that the woman is chayevet imperia verivia because, and here we get back all the way to Gan Eden, it sets the both of them. So my ikala memer, what about that problem? I mean, maybe it's not an issue of Sirus, but it should be usur to make it impossible to reproduce. Well, it could be talking about is it kena, so she's no longer childbearing age. Or it could be that she was an akara. She's someone who is barren her whole life, and therefore there would be no iser of problematic period of arrivia, and there's no iser of serus. And therefore, that might be where you're allowed, the patient is allowed to use this stuff to cure the hepatitis. Okay.
Maybe picking out the sarin from the dung that was also in the churban. I'm just wondering if there's a remnant there.
Yes, it was in the churban. It was in the Doris of Acher. It's a common theme. Yes. All right, Rabbi Isai. It's been quite a journey over here. We are not out of the so-called medical issues yet, but we should be back to normal soon. Okay. Anyway, collect those pigeons and get them ready for all kinds of exciting usages, or at least experiments, and we'll meet again, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow. I can't wait till we get back to normal and get some of the Masechet Shabbos under our belts again. Okay, but it's been wonderful being with you. I appreciate it so much. Kol Tov and Chodesh Tov and Mevorach.